Welcome to Talmud Class from Temple Emmanuel.
Boker Tov, everybody. Shabbat Shalom. We are here together, our beloved clergy team, in the Gan Chapel. It is Wednesday, May 8th, the day that we're taping it. We are nestled in the heart of Jewish History Week. This past Monday was Yom HaShoah. Tuesday night, last night, was our Yom HaShoah commemoration program, which we'll talk about. Of course, next Monday and Tuesday are Yom HaZikaron and Yom HaAtzma'ut. And all of this, of course, is taking place against the backdrop of the exhibit that is so controversial and painful in Newton and the broader context of our world. So I want to begin by just noting that the Yom HaShoah commemoration that we had last night felt unusually intense, and I wanted to it was way more people than we usually get for Yom HaShoah. I mean, the Rabbi Chill Sanctuary was basically full, and there was an intensity together. This entire congregation watched Paula Apsel's masterful film, Resistance. They fought back. There was an intensity to it, and I just wanted, and of course, it's all happening, again, against the backdrop of the surge in anti-Semitism, etc. So I first just wanted to hear what you guys thought about last night and how you experienced it.
Well, Elias mentioned earlier that this felt so different because now we are, in a certain way, kind of living some of those circumstances, you know, seeing the rise in anti-Semitism. So I think that that also was part of what brought so many people here to connect with that. And you know, talking earlier about did you sleep last night? And I finally just had to say at 2 a.m, you know, I really have to try to get some sleep, because everything was running through my head. I was mentioning to Elias earlier also that what I thought was, since I've actually been to many of these places, I've been to Auschwitz, I've been to Treblinka, I've been to Terezin, I know the stories, but the impact of that film resonated in a really, really, really deep way, and would not allow my brain and my body to find a place to be able to even find some sleep.
You hit the nail on the head with the word masterful. And Paula Apsel has pulled together a series of stories that were so deeply, deeply powerful that really you could hear everyone in the room holding their breath. It was palpable, right? You could hear the absence of breathing.
Right.
I could hear people crying behind me, and I was joining them. I mean, it was powerful.
Yeah, and there was just an intensity of taking all of this in as a congregation in our most sacred space together at a time like this. It was just really intense. Aliza, how did you experience the night?
I sobbed my way through the movie. I sobbed my way through the after of the movie and a lot of the evening, and I think it felt visceral to me. It felt, this was the first year I was experiencing these stories, knowing a little bit of what it is to be a mother, and the stories of mothers in the film and parents in the film just broke my heart. I understood it from a child's perspective, but now it's just, it's so different. And I think for me, I'm still processing. I felt the heartbreak and the tragedy, and I also was hearing the echoes of words that are used to promote anti-Israel sentiment with the resistance, fight in any way you need to, any kind of resistance is good resistance, which are the words that are now being used against us. And so it was very surreal for me, the watching this film about righteous resistance and about fighting back against an enemy that just wants to kill us, and also focusing in on the ways that the Nazis tried to take away our humanity and put Jews in positions where Jews were having to oppress their fellow Jews and in horrible situations, and now feeling like we're fighting Hamas, which are Nazis, which are again trying to put us in a position where we have, where we are, they are forcing us into harming people. And it's just, it's awful the way that this story continues and the trauma of it all, that that we are such a traumatized people, and our darkest, most painful moment is now in all of the phraseology and all of the words around us is being reawakened. And I just, for me, the weight of, it's not just the trauma of then, it's the trauma of now, and that feels just unbearable.
Yeah, thank you. Elias, how did you experience last night?
Yeah, similar experience to most of you. I watch a lot of movies throughout my life about the Holocaust, and I always had this idea, even when I was in Argentina, that that was a long time ago, that things like that don't happen anymore. And I'm not so sure about that these days. And that's the scary part. I had these conflicting sentiments throughout the movie, that I was, in a way, you know, enjoying, if I could say enjoying the movie, how well done it was. But at the same time, I wanted to be over. It's like I had, like you said, a pit in the stomach. Is how much longer I can watch this? Because it's what I said before. And then, I don't know, it's really scary how people can get brainwashed and get behind a line of thought that could be really scary.
Yeah.
Really scary.
So all these comments, you know, yeah, so it was incredibly intense. The only new voice that I would add that we haven't mentioned was, I'm so angry that Israel is accused of genocide. This movie talks about what genocide is. Genocide is you take an innocent, helpless, hapless population and murder them. That's genocide. This is a just war that Israel is fighting justly and messily, because Hamas, which murdered our people, insinuates itself in population centers and leaves Israel with no choice. If they want to get Hamas, they have to go into the population centers in which Hamas has deliberately embedded itself, leaving Israel with no choice but to kill civilians, because Hamas has started the war and planted itself. And the fact that so much of the world, including the morally bankrupt, the immoral UN and the immoral Hague, doesn't bring up Hamas for starting this, or doesn't bring up Hezbollah for firing missiles on Israeli civilian centers, but only brings up Israel for the crime of genocide. And the fact that we have elected leaders like AOC or Elizabeth Warren, who used the word genocide. I mean, the Holocaust is genocide. This is called a just war being justly fought. And the fact that there's so much misbegotten, hateful speech around genocide, it just filled me with rage. And that was a note that came up for me last night. When you see innocent people in concentration camps and crematoria, that's genocide. Fighting back against people who murdered, raped, slaughtered, and massacred us on October 7th, that's not genocide. That's called a just war.
So I totally hear you. And it reminds me of something that my Angelika Zollfrank, who led my pastoral care seminar at Mass General Hospital, would say, that anger is often a cover for grief and pain. I think one of the moments that I felt just it made me queasy was the discussion about the Warsaw Ghetto, because this is a just war, but there are also actions that are that have been taken and are being taken that are totally unjust. And I think we have to be able to call that out, because when it's a paradigm of just or unjust and we have no nuance, then we can't actually hear. And I think that there is truth that, yes, Hamas has embedded themselves in population centers, and yes, the only way to get Hamas is to attack civilians. Like, they are using civilians, and that's in their interest. However, food and water and supplies, there is a way that we are fighting this war in a very unjust way, because depriving civilians of food and basic necessities for life, that is what happened to us. We are recreating an experience that we lived through, and not in a positive way. And again, it's complicated, because the way that the world is working right now, there's two teams. You're either for Israel or you're against Israel. You're either pro-Israel or, like, there's no nuance. And I think that we have work to do, because we have to be able to acknowledge that what Israel is doing is not genocide, and there are ways in which we are acting out of anger and out of desire for revenge that undermine our credibility and undermine our legitimacy on the world stage, and that has to be called out. Depriving civilians of food is not just. It will never be just.
Yeah. Yes. And, like some of my colleagues like to say, Israel is not the only, in a way, country participating in this, all right? So the Palestinians have their own fault in this by choosing Hamas. And what about Egypt?
Right.
What
about Egypt? So no, I want to bring the conversation back.
No, let me
back.
Finish. Yeah. I just started to talk. I don't get why it's only blame to Israel. Everything is blame on Israel, and we know that. It used to be, the famous word used to be apartheid. Now it is genocide. Remember? Nobody talks about apartheid now anymore, that Israel is an apartheid country. That was genocide.
Well, they do, too, talk about. But in any event, I think you raise, look, there's a lot to be said about that. That's a different conversation. But this is the week of Yom HaShoah. And I want to talk about a different important topic, which is building on the energy of last night. I just want to surface the question and talk about whether the 30s and 1941 to 1945 in Germany and Eastern Europe, whether that is a helpful lens or a hysterical lens for today. And I wanted to frame that question, is it hysterical or is it helpful to talk about the 30s and 40s with two pieces before we say the bracha. One was, first of all, I want to just observe that I think where a lot of us are is that the 30s is our lens. The 30s in Germany is our lens, right? Whether it's right or wrong, whether it's hysterical or historical, whether it's helpful or unhelpful, I believe the reason on a Tuesday night in May when the Celtics were playing the Cavaliers in the first game of the playoffs, the reason that despite all that, that the sanctuary was full is that is the lens of a lot of people. And it's about traumatized then and traumatized now. And I shared with you the story that at the donor event on Sunday morning, you know, it was just so unreal. I was looking at the boutiques and at the beautiful jewelry and the clothing and the artifacts and the food coming by with the waiters, and it was so festive. And a woman comes to me to say what I shared in the teaser, which is that all my family in Eastern Europe that said, don't be alarmist, don't be hysterical, it will pass. They're all dead. And the ones who said, be hysterical, be alarmed, it's real, they're the ones who are alive. And I'm here because my parents were paranoid, and they were right to be. And her lens is the 1930s. And on the other hand, I shared that, you know, Daniel and Yossi Klein Halevi in their podcast said, stop talking that way, American Jews. It's not right. It's not accurate. It's a distortion of history. You know, if you think about the movie Last Night and all of its horror, that's not our horror. We have a different horror. So don't be talking about the Holocaust. It amps up anxiety, and it's just not warranted. The people who died in the Holocaust and the partisans who were in the forest, etc., what they had is an infinity worse, more cruel, more horrific than anything we have with college kids protesting. Stop it. So I wanted to just kind of name that tension. And before we look at the text, ask you what you think about it. Here, I want to ask you for you, not for us, but for you personally, is the 30s in Germany your lens for now?
Yeah, I think it is.
It is, and why, Dan?
Because we can, you know, we can look back at history, and we now know exactly, as Elisa pointed out very clearly, how the Germans, and Elias mentioned this, how the Germans actually created brainwashing, how they isolated us, how they created moments of humiliation for us, and we can see that happening in this country. We can see it happening. So yes, it's a lens. Now, are we hysterical about that? That's a different question, because the fact that we can, and also, you know, we could also do the parallel that, you know, the Jews in Germany were highly cultured, were highly assimilated, in a very, very culturally beautiful country and society. So we can see that we have those parallels. Now, is it time to think about, you know, are we going to be thrown in camps, et cetera? God forbid, no. And I don't think that will happen. But then on the other hand, you know, and will it ever happen in this country? Well, it did happen in this country. You think, look what happened with the Asians, Asian Americans and the Japanese in California and really all over the country, that we did the same thing in that country. So is it possible? I don't know, but I don't know. It's a call for hysteria, but it's also a call for caution and awareness. Mm. And as you know, as the film said, you know, resistance and fighting back, I think, is really, really essential.
Michelle, is it your lens, the 30s in Germany, your lens today?
So I think it's one lens, right? I mean, I look at a wide swath of possibility in this moment. There are any number of ways this moment could go. And I think it would be naive not to be concerned that one of those directions could look, you know, somewhat similar to Jews being not just disenfranchised, as we're starting to be now, but actually physically pursued and even murdered. That is certainly a path that could happen. It is potential, right? But do I think that's the most likely path given our set of facts that we're living in, including if you watched, you know, the Holocaust address from the President of the United States yesterday, you would see that it's not state-sponsored at this moment, and I think we are a very far cry from that at this point. And I do still see many other possibilities in unfolding, including, you know, Brett Stevens wrote what I thought was a very powerful article yesterday, in which he said thank you to the college encampment protesters, because actually among at least some folks, and I don't know that I buy his argument that it's everybody, right? But among at least a certain population of the American, of Americans, they are experiencing a backlash against the madness, and that the very fact of the madness is actually creating a stronger future of possibility to fight against this hatred. So I think any number of, lots of doors are open right now, and it is very scary. It's a very tense time.
Elias, is the 30s in Germany your lens for today?
In some aspects, yes, in some others, not. Let's not forget that in Germany, the Jews only got emancipation around 1880. So he has been, before that, they were not allowed to have regular professions like any other citizen. And even when they got it, there was a huge amount of the German population who was against it, that the Jews will be integrated into society. This is not the case of America. American Jewish person has been around for 250 years, and it's we can spend the whole day counting the amazing contributions of the Jewish community to America. So in that aspect, it's not comparable. In the aspect of brainwashing, it's really comparable. Because from criticizing Israel to criticizing the Jewish people is just, you know, one very thin line. And the same aspect and about Israel being a genocide could start, you know, about Jews being the ones who control the world and they control the economy and they control the politicians here in America. So in that aspect, definitely is the lens of the Holocaust.
Mm. Aliza, is 1930s Germany your lens for today?
No. I talked about this a little bit last week, but I've been finding weird comfort in anti-Semitism of our past, that, you know, I think the work of today is not to allow what's happening on college campuses and the rhetoric that's sort of in the water to trigger us back to 1930s, 1940s. The work of today is to do some historical learning and to re-encounter that this is normative, that this is what our ancestors experienced, that this is the closest we've ever come to being in touch with our ancestors, and what our ancestors did in the face of unimaginable anti-Semitism throughout history was that they thrived, was that they created culture and they created literature and they learned and they grew and the communities were strong. And so I think the more likely read is that our sanctuary will be more and more full. The more likely read is that our community will be stronger and stronger, will be that this negative force around us is going to be like a vaccine that helps us to fight against it and to be immune to the disease of anti-Semitism. And that takes work. It takes real work to not go into the 1930s mindset. I also just want to say, we were meeting with Rob Lykin this morning and from AJC, and he was talking with us, like, what does that do? Like, going into that paranoia, what does it do for us? And I just think that's a really important thing, because we have no control over what's happening on these college campuses. We don't have control over the world, but we do have a modicum of control over our hearts. And I think if we can exercise that control and we can, now, it doesn't mean that we might not make choices at some point about, you know, where we're gonna be and how we're gonna be. Like, I think it's totally reasonable to say, I'm gonna continue to evaluate the security situation in every moment and decide what I'm doing. And I'm gonna choose not to give myself over to paranoia, because that doesn't help me, it doesn't help my community, and it doesn't help the world.
So I wanna just weigh in here. I don't think it's paranoia. And I, for me personally, the 30s in Germany is my lens. It is my lens. Not in the sense of Auschwitz in America. I have zero concern about Auschwitz in America. I think the horrific things we saw in Paul Apsel's movie, Resistance, They Fought Back, I don't believe those will ever happen in America. I have faith and confidence that will never happen in America. So in that sense, the 30s Germany, I don't worry about that. I worry about a very different thing, and it is happening. It is not paranoid. It is happening, which is that it has become mainstreamed and normalized to believe that Israel has no right to exist. It has become mainstreamed and normalized to feel that the founding of Israel was a historic wrong on the shoulders of the Palestinian people that must be rectified. It has become normalized and mainstreamed to think that the IDF, no matter what they do, is genocidal and apartheid and war criminals, and it has become normalized and mainstreamed to assert that Hamas is a liberation movement, and that all the violence they do, well, there's no bloodless revolutions or few bloodless revolutions, and October 7th is, what did you expect? Of course that's gonna happen, and that's what Israelis get for existing. And that is on college campuses, and I'll tell you what has given me the big jolt is the Nakba exhibit. First, the fact that it came to be, I have 100% confidence that it was intentional. Not the mayor was aghast at it, I believe, and she didn't know about it. But some library committee member wanted to bring the Nakba exhibit to a strongly Jewish town, to bring the fight about Israel to Newton specifically. There's nothing casual, nothing accidental There's nothing like, oh my God, I didn't know it would be controversial to call Israel's existence a Nakba that's an ongoing and unrelenting thing from 1948 till the present. And the library committee was able to do that. And what's even worse is when you go to the exhibit room, which I've been to four times, the comments of Newton residents are incredibly in support of the fact that the exhibit is here, and extremely, not favorable, but very favorable about the exhibit. Thank you for bringing the story of the tragedy of the ongoing and unrelenting Nakba of the Palestinians to Newton. This is something we need to know about. There's corrupt power structures, we need to fix it, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So you use, people have used the word brainwashing. I think, and where this, so I'm not worried about Auschwitz in America. Here's my Auschwitz in America that I am worried about. I'm worried about Majority Leader AOC. I'm worried about AOC challenging Charles Schumer. I'm worried about AOC getting elected by all the progressive and woke people and the young people and the progressive people who hate on Israel. I'm worried that the next war, where the majority leader is AOC, that is a heart attack for the Jewish people. I'm worried that the next Speaker of the House, it would be Ilhan Omar or Ayanna Pressley or Rashid Tlaib. That will be a heart attack for the Jewish people. If AOC is running the Senate, if Rashid Tlaib is, or Ilhan Omar is running the House, you better believe we're talking about an existential threat for the Jewish homeland. And that's where we are. So I think we have to be granular and thoughtful. When I say the 30s Germany is my lens, I don't mean Auschwitz, I mean Speaker of the House Ilhan Omar or Ayanna Pressley. You know, Ayanna Pressley could not muster even a modicum of sympathy for the dead on October 7th, and she weeps bitter tears for Gaza civilians. I'm okay with her weeping bitter tears for Gaza civilians. I'm not okay with the complete invisibility of Jewish death to Ayanna Pressley. And when those when that kind of perspective becomes normalized, which it is, and our college, you know, you met with eighth graders, anti-Semitism, Israel, etc., normalized, we got a problem. Houston, we've got a big problem. So I think it is. I think that 30s is a lens that's helpful, and it calls us to do what Paula Apsel's film calls us to do, which is to fight back. So what I want to do.
But Wes, let me ask you a question regarding what you said. I tend to agree in everything you said. But if that is the case, my perspective is that wouldn't end with just not supporting Israel anymore.
Who knows?
It would not end because they know that the majority of us support Israel.
Right, but I
if we are really, really dramatic here and we are exaggerating what I said before, hating Israel, the next step is hating the Jews who support Israel.
Right. I mean, right. But look, we don't have to debate. Would that lead to Auschwitz in America? I don't think it would. But on these three, we have three simple questions. That if you were to talk to high school kids today or college kids today, I'm afraid about the answers to these questions. And if you talk to the Newton residents who are drawn to see the Nakba exhibit, I'm afraid about the answers to these three questions, three simple crystalline questions. Number one, was Israel's founding a historic mistake that must be rectified? Too many people would say yes. Are the IDF war criminals for defending Israelis? Too many people would say yes. And is Hamas a terrorist organization or freedom fighters a liberation movement? Too many people would say it's a liberation movement. Too many people who are in America today would say that. That's going to affect politics. That's going to affect who gets elected. That's going to affect the politics of supporting Israel in the next war. And that's our existential moment. And I think we are in delusion if we don't see that.
I want to bring another perspective, and I'm so grateful that we met with Rob this morning, and I wish I remembered. He cited a study that was done on college campuses to rank issues as students weighed them out. And there were, you know, immigration and finance, economy, and all the different issues that our country is facing, and on that list was Israel. And in this study, college students over and over again rated as the least important issue for them. And I think that's a really important caveat, that we are hearing a small minority of very loud voices, and that it's not the majority. There was a social worker in Homestead Elementary School in Centennial, Colorado. His name was Paul Von Essen. And when I was an elementary school student, he had a bully-proofing program, which was about treating the caring community and not addressing the bullies. He believed that you have to respond to bullies, but his thing was 85% of any grade school class is going to be bystanders. They're going to be kids that genuinely care and genuinely want to do the right thing and need to learn how to stand up to bullies. And if you engage the 85%, then you take care of bullies automatically. If there's an environment where bullying can't exist, that's our problem today. I think we need to build a caring community. We have to engage the 85%, and the more energy we focus on the 15%, that are anti-Israel and anti-Semitic and are making all these noises on the college campuses, we lose sight of the 85%. We begin to feel hopeless. We begin to feel powerless. And it doesn't actually help us, because what we need is to cultivate the 85% against this movement.
I'm happy to do that. Let me just, we're running out of time. By all means, engage the 85%. I also want to just do a call to action to Newton. I think, and this is for me as well, I think we who love Israel need to do a few new moves that'll take us out of our comfort zone. Number one, we need to be on that library committee. We need to be more active in civic government. We need to be on the library committee that figures out what exhibits are we going to show, so that when somebody says, let's bring up the Nakba, there's somebody who says no. I also think we need to be much more active politically. Because, and I wish I could just daven Shacharis Mincha Maariv all day and never enter the world of politics, but Democrats who are incumbent, who support Israel, are being primaried by Democrats who are anti-Israel, and that to me is the call to action. We need to make sure that people of both parties who are elected support Israel's right to exist and support Israel's right to defend itself. And that used to be obvious, but there is a lot of energy to make what used to be obvious no longer obvious. That is, Israel doesn't have a right to exist, it doesn't have the right to defend itself, and there are people who are primarying incumbent Democrats whose basic proposition is no Israel. And we need to support candidates of both parties who support Israel. I want to say, I think this is a call to action moment. I want to say that if we think, oh no, it's going to blow over, it doesn't blow over. If there's a lesson from Jewish history, it's that the paranoid people are right. Shabbat shalom.